So we left off the previous shiur, dealing with the chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was the biggest believer of the fact that a kinyan chalipin is an acceptable form of kinyan for a goy as well. He said this is not just theoretical, this plays out in terms of selling animals for bechor and selling chometz for us. It's really, really the maisa. Rabbeinu Tam held that kinyan chalipin is acceptable, and not everyone agreed. Shach disagreed, other ready, Rishon ready disagreed. Rabbeinu Tam not only paskin it in theory, but he actually put it into practice in his own business. We'll just give a little bit of a background to what Rabbeinu Tam's business was, how he had to put it into practice. And we mentioned before, Rabbeinu Tam was a money lender. The reason why he was a money lender is because the Jews couldn't own land, they couldn't do any crafts, so there was almost no way to make a parnasa. So many Jews were money lenders. So he used to be money lenders to goyim, lend from one goy to another goy, to a Jew, whole story. So in the middle of some of his business dealings, so Rabbeinu Tam sometimes would have property of his that was in another town that had to be collected. Now that always raises a red flag. How are you going to go about doing that? So here Rabbeinu Tam is sitting in a small town in France, writing Tosim, and he knows he has somebody who has something that belongs to him, 100 miles away. So in the Middle Ages, once it's simple to travel, 100 miles, once it's simple to travel 2 miles. So there's a principle in halacha that I can appoint somebody to go do my business dealings for me. I guess the guess would be almost like the modern day equivalent of a power of attorney. So I appoint somebody. I'm not going to go schlepzuch to go collect my chavis, to collect my pikdonos, to collect things that are coming to me. So I'll appoint somebody else to do it on my behalf. So that sounds like it should be okay, except the Gemara in Bava Kamma raises a problem with that. Is that when my quote-unquote attorney is going to go and try to collect my property from somebody else, the other guy is going to respond by saying, "La bal dvarm didia, you're not my, I don't know who you are." The guy's going to say, "Who are you? What shaykh is I after you? Why do I have to go to court with you? Why do I have to deal with you?" Say, let the original, let the person who really has a claim against me come. So therefore, the Gemara says, because of that concern of the other party responding, "La bal dvarm didia," the halacha, Pashas, it's been there. Another question, but the halacha comes up with the following eitzah, that you can have what's called a ksav harshah. If I, the person who wants to collect the property that belongs to me in another town, if I write a document hereby appointing you to serve as my representative, it's not just words, but it's actually put into print. You walk into Beis Din with what's called a ksav harshah. So a ksav harshah is binding in halacha, and now you can represent me, and the other person can't say a word. The only thing is that you have to do a little bit more than that. It's not enough just to write a document saying you're representing me. I have to almost make you a party. I have to actually sell you, or at least sell you a share, make you some shaykh, some connection to this money. So I'm makna to you, I transfer ownership to you, a shtickle part of this claim as well. So you have three parties. So I'm the businessman. I'm the one who has a lot of money coming to me, and I want to go collect my money from Reuven. So for me, just to send shipment to Reuven just like that and say, "Here I am, give Rabbi Zelovsky the money," that's not going to fly. Even if I just write a document, it's also not going to fly. I have to be mocked to the middleman, part of the chov, part of the pikado, whatever the case may be. And since he's now a bailim, now he's an owner, now he's a real party to this deal, then he can go and represent himself, his small portion, and me as well. That's all part of whole sugya in Maseches Bava Kamma. So it's critical for me to enter into some kind of an agreement, a real acquisition with the middleman, who we call the Mursha. So I'm the Marsha, I'm the one who's writing the Arsha. The Mursha is the other person. So how do you go about setting up this kinyan? What method of acquisition would you use? So the easiest method of acquisition is the kinyan chalipin. So if everybody's Jewish, that sounds great, no problem. You have Reuven, Shimon, Levi. So Reuven wants to send Shimon to collect his property from Levi. So no problem. Reuven makes a kinyan chalipin, and Shimon wants to be kohen. Shimon is going to acquire. So Shimon takes off his hat, hands it to Reuven. Shimon takes off his watch, hands it to Reuven. And he buys Kona with the kinyan chalipin the right to be able to collect part of that chov as well. So it sounds like everything's simple. What if the person is doing the traveling is not a Jew? What if the person is doing the traveling is a goy? So that becomes a little bit more complicated. Why? Because we still have to come up with a method of acquisition to get it, to get the property to belong to the goy. Because if the goy, the person who's the agent, does not have a stake, does not have a share in the property, so then the third part is going to say to him, "Well, I don't know who you are. You don't belong here." So we still have to, in order for this harshah to be valid, we still have to figure out a way to transfer the property from Reuven to, we'll call him John now, Reuven to John, so John can go on to Shimon and go collect the money. The problem is which method of acquisition we're going to use. So came Rabbeinu Tam and says, let me tell you the solution. Since on Kiddushin Dav Gimel, I already proved to you that a goy has a kinyan chalipin. Kinyan chalipin is a Jewish kinyan, is a goyish kinyan, is a universal kinyan. Says Rabbeinu Tam, no big deal. Let John give me a suitor. John, I can't sell John, I'll take off his yarmulke, take off his glasses, I'll take off his watch, take out his pen. John should hand to Rabbeinu Tam. He should hand him a kli, a suitor. He'll make a kinyan suitor. So he'll be kona by handing his pen to Rabbeinu Tam. He'll be kona a share, he'll acquire a share in this business dealing somewhere. And then John will be fully authorized by Rabbeinu Tam to go to travel the 100 miles to Shimon and go collect all the property and bring it back to Rabbeinu Tam, and he'll get his little bit of his commission and Shalom al Yisrael. So everything is hinging upon the validity of a kinyan suda, the kinyan chalipin. And Rabbeinu Tam says, this is great, this is fine. And actually Rabbeinu Tam used to do this. So if you take a look at the 10th of the Bar Mikvaos, so in Kedushin Dav Gimel, the end of our Tosis, so the end of the second line, on the 10th of the Bar Mikvaos, the Chena Yerogel Rabbeinu Tam, Lishloach Hashem B'yad Avi Kichavim, that Rabbeinu Tam, as part of his regular business dealings, would do this, would send Harsha with a goy, and he would use a kinyan chalipin to get around any of these issues. But now Tosa says, you have to be a little bit careful. Because if you're going down this route of Rabbeinu Tam and invoking kinyan chalipin for a goy, umil bazet zorech li zoher, you have to be careful, shelo lichto v'kanina minei, the ain shlichos uzchil li avi kichavim kinaminim v'perachamishin above metziah. So comes Tosa and puts the brakes on Rabbeinu Tam's solution and says, just be careful when you do this stunt not to do the following. And the question, not to do what? What? Where? Who's writing? Shlichos, what's going on? So we have to a little bit more of a background. Whenever we do a kinyan chalipin, so let's say a simple kinyan chalipin, I want to sell, Reuven wants to buy something from Shimon. So the simplest way to do it is that Reuven should take off his hat, take his handkerchief, take his pen. Reuven should take his kli, and he should give it to the mocher, to the seller, and he should be kona kinyan chalipin. That's the obvious way to do it. You have a mocher and a kona. The kona takes off his own shirt, his own hat, and he does it. That's the simple pshat. There is a halacha that it's not even necessary for the kona himself to do it. The halacha says that even somebody else could do it on behalf of the kona. Let's say the aid don't want to do it. Let's say there's a third party wants to do it. That's perfectly acceptable. In fact, we actually do that all the time. When we do a kinyan suda right before the chuppah, we make a kinyan suda. We obligate the chassan to pay everything that it says in the ksuba. The chassan promises he's going to pay the main money of the ksuba, and he adds on more, the dowry, all these, I can't say hundreds of thousands of dollars, but a couple of thousand dollars that he commits himself to what it says in the shtag ksuba. So we want to make a kinyan on this. We want to make it minding. So we do a kinyan suit. We make a kinyan chalipin that I'm buying from the chassan this chol. The chassan is now selling, in effect, to the kala. He's obligating himself. So he's selling something of himself to the kala. So we have to make a kinyan chalipin. So the best way to do it would be for the kala to come and to hand, take a hawach, take out her pen out of her pocket, and hand it to the chassan. And what they should do is, by the chassan's dish, the kala should walk in, she should hand her pen, and say, I'm hereby acquiring from you your obligation to give me the ksuban, to give me the nedunyan, to give me the tesefet, all the things that delineates in the ksuban. That's what should happen. So we don't do that. That's a little, you know, a little funny, right? As Andrew could tell you, you know, the kala's busy sitting on her throne, we come upon him there, the chassan's nervous over here, they don't want to see each other. No, nobody does it that way. So what do? We do the next best thing. Instead of pestering the kala to come to the chassan, or sending the chassan off to the shmogus board, so we're very simple. Usually the rabbi gets up and he says, I'm going to represent the kala. I'm hereby making a kinyan chalipin on behalf of your kala. And he takes out his pen, and he hocus pocus, and he hands the chassan his own, the Masada Kedushin's pen, and he says, I'm hereby being kona on behalf of the kala. How did that work? Where did that come from? So the pashtus is, that's based on the principle of shlichus, that shluch shlam kemoso, that somebody can represent somebody else. Now, but that's only true if that other person was appointed. Let's say if I appoint somebody to be Mekadesh Anisha, I appoint you to be Mafish Truma, I appoint you to Shech Mekorban Pesach, so the Gemara learns out from Pesuchim, Shluchu Shalom Kemoso. Here, The Kala didn't actually call. It's not a condition. It's not texting her by the chassan station saying, can you please formally appoint me to be your shaliach? She's busy with her friends. He's busy with his friends. The rabbi's trying to get things moving. So there's no official appointment of shalichos. So the answer is, you're right. It's not real shalichos. It's what we call zechiah. It's called zach in the adam shalom b'fanav. If I know that something is beneficial for you, I could actually do it on your behalf. Let's say if I want to give you a gift, and you're in China right now, so I'll give the gift to Reuven. I say, Reuven, pick up the gift on behalf of Shimon. Since Shimon likes to get gifts, it's a good thing to get gifts. So when Reuven picks it up, Shimon is Zocha. It's called Zoch Liyarim Shalom Afanam. So the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin later on, the second Barak, quotes Psukim, that there's a principle of Shlichos, and there's a principle of Zoch Liyarim Shalom Afanam. Everything is great, everything is wonderful. One of the breaks on Zoch Liyarim Shalom Afanam, that's only if the person subsequently decides that it was beneficial. What if, let's say he was in China, and I was Mazaka, a gift to somebody else on his behalf, and he comes back from China, he says, I don't want your gifts, I don't want to be beholden to you, I don't really like you, and no thank you. So then the gift is batel mevut, and then the gift was null and void, because he gloy bilslam afreya, turned out retroactively, it wasn't his chos all along. But assuming that it was his chos, assuming that when he comes back and he says, oh well, thank you so much, that was so thoughtful of you, then retroactively it belonged to him from the moment that somebody was on his behalf. So that's exactly what's going on by the chos and tish as well. This is the halachic mechanism that's happening. We have to have a kiddin chalipin. So the kala should really give the handkerchief herself. She's not coming, so she should really appoint the shaliach. That's not happening. So what we do is, every Masada Kedusha knows, the kala definitely wants this. She wants to get married. She wants to have rights to the ksuba. So it's obviously in her best interest to do this kinyan. So we have a right to do this kinyan on behalf of the kala. So that's exactly what happens. Standard procedure every wedding. We invoke Zoch Liyarim Shalom Afanav to make the kinyan suda, make the kinyan chalipa, suda kinyan suda chalipa, of course, are synonyms, to make this kinyan chalipin on behalf of the kala. So comes Rabbi Natam, comes Tosus and says, this is all great, this is all wonderful, provided that everybody is Jewish. Now, obviously, the chuppah, hopefully, if one of the parties here is not Jewish, we have much more serious problems. So comes to us and says, assuming that everybody is Jewish here, everything is great. Why? Because the parashiyos of shlichus and zechiyah apply for Jews. There's no shlichus for goyim, and there's no zechiyah for goyim. The whole din of zoch liyarim shalom afanav does not apply to goyim. That's Gemara explicitly in the fifth paragraph of Mitzvah. Those who are learning Daf Yomi, it's right around the bend in a couple of days from now. There is no such thing as zechiyah, not min haTorah, not min derabanan, between Jews and goyim. So now comes Rabbi Natam and says, going back to his business dealing. So Rabbi Natam is sending John to go travel to the other end of France to go collect all the money from Shimon. So in order for this hashor to take effect, John has to be kona his share, a small share, in that property that he's about to go collect on behalf of, quote-unquote, himself and Rabbi Natam. What kinyan is he going to use? He's going to use the kinyan chalipin. So Rabbi Natam said, that's fine. I have no problem having him do a kinyan chalipin. But wait, says Rabbi Natam, he has to do the kinyan chalipin. What if John's busy? John's getting his horse and buggy ready outside to get ready on his trip. So Rabbi Natam says, all right, don't worry about John. We'll get somebody else. I'll give the someone else to give me the handkerchief on behalf of John, like we do by the chuppah. So Rabbi Natam says, no, you can't do that. Because let's say Rabbi Natam is a Talmud. Rabbi Natam is Rabbi Chaim Cohen. It's the Talmud of Rabbi Natam. So Rabbi Chaim Cohen says, Rabbi, I want to help you with the business. I'm going to go and represent John here. Instead of bothering you, let John take care of the horses. And we'll take care of the kinyanim. So when John is getting the horses mounted, so I'm going to give you a handkerchief on behalf of John. And John should hereby be kind of his share in the property that you want to appoint him to go collect from you. And Shalom Yisrael. So Tosu says, Shalom Yisrael, but not necessarily Shalom to the Jews and the Goy. It's not going to happen, says Tosu. That whole mechanism is going to fail. Why? Because John's got to come and make the kinyan suder. Because if Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen goes ahead and does the kinyan suder on behalf of John, so that's a violation of Ein Shlichus Liyakom, Ein Zechil Liyakom. So true Rabbeinu Tam solved the chalipin problem, because Rabbeinu Tam, the Shitaso holds that chalipin is a valid method of kinyan for goyim, but it's only a valid method if the goy does it himself. If somebody represents the goy, that's a no-no, because ein zechiya la'akom. So that's what Rabbi Natam meant. If you go back to the Tosfos, Rabbi Natam, let's read the Tosfos again. V'cheinai ragel Rabbi Natam, the second line from the top, Mar Makom number 10. V'cheinai ragel Rabbi Natam, l'shloach hashoah bi'alevi kichavim. Rabbi Natam, very common business practice, would send the power of attorney using a goy. Well, you mock the bechalipin. They used to make a kid in chalipin. So you have to be careful. You can't write up saying that the kanina means beloshin rab, that we bought on behalf of John. What you have to write in the Shtahar Shah is that the guy bought it. The word vikana has the connotation that he did the kinyan chalipin himself. The word vikanina is a lashon rab, and that means we did the kinyan chalipin on his behalf, and that would be a no-no. Ad kan divrei Rabbeinu Tam. So there was a major machlokes in the poskim as to what in the world Rabbeinu Tam was concerned about. What exactly did Tosfos not want to happen? There is something very, very strange in the formulation of this Tosfos. Because if I was writing the Tosfos, let's read the Tosfos for the third time, we're going to read it the way I would have written the Tosfos. So let's go back to the end of the second line, Umil. So the Tosfos just told you in the name of Rabbeinu Tam that the chalipin done by a goy is fine, but just be careful that the goy himself does it, bring him in from doing the horses, let him do the kinyan chalipin rather than us do it on his behalf. What I would have written is as follows. Umiyu bazetzach li zoher, shalo liknos bishvil hagoy. My words in the Tosfos, right? Because ein shlichos v'zchili av gichavim. Ela, yase hagoy hakinin biatzmo. That's what I would have written. Tosfos is telling you what to write in the document. Why is Tosfos telling you what to write? Who's talking about the document? After this is all done, we're going to write up a document, and the document's going to say whatever's going to say, whatever happened, and the guy is going to go and present the document when he comes 100 miles away, and the base is going to help him out. Why is Tosfos talking after the facts? Why is Tosfos talking about what it says in the Shtar? Tosfos should have told us what to do. Tosfos should have said, Tzorech Lizor, Shalo Liknos, Biyad HaGoy. What does it mean? Shalo Lichtov Kanina, da 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 da. So this was a major machlekes achronim. What did Tosfos mean? So the Sma, one of the Nosei Kelim at Shulchan Aruch. So the Sma says that the Lashon of Tosfos is really Lav Dafka. What Tosfos really meant to say was what's actually happening. What they're writing is a reflection of what happened. So if the goy did the kinyan himself, then they wrote the goy did the kinyan. If the Jews did it on behalf of the goy, then they wrote that, which would be no good. So says the Sma, don't be medayek, don't read the Tosfos like through a microscope. Tosfos is just writing very quickly and saying, make sure to do it right, and therefore make sure that the text of the Shtar is such and such, which will be a reflection of what actually happened. That's how the Sma learns. So the Sma took this big balloon that we just created, hey, why did Tosfos write this way, not the other way, and popped it and said, yeah, that's what they meant. They didn't mean anything more than that. So comes the Ktzos, the bottom of the 12th of the Maamar Kamos, and says that he radically disagrees with what the Sma said. Says the Ktzos, if Tosfos meant that to make sure that the Jew does the Kinyan, then Tosfos should have said, make sure the Jew does the Kinyan. Tosfos wrote roundabout for a very real reason. Says the Sma, let's go back to the drawing board. So let's go to the second paragraph in the Ktzos, the 12th of the Maamar Kamos. Amnam da the lechora yirah. It would appear the suda shenostin ha'edim eino ela b'tara shlichos lechora. This practice that we have at our chasanas, that the besada kedushin gives the handkerchief on behalf of the kala, that sounds like shlichus. Again, it's not real shlichus because there was no official appointment, but it's zichia, which is part of the parasha shlichus, related to the parasha shlichus. It's the besada kedushin acting as either a literally appointed shliach or a quasi appointed or unappointed, but still apa bichein a shliach. That's what it sounds like. So says the Ktzos, I'm going to prove to you that it's not true. That the giving of the handkerchief by the Masada Kedushin, or in this case, the giving of the handkerchief by the Talmud on behalf of the Goy, this has nothing to do with Shlichus. You're going down the wrong road. Says the Ktzos, how will I prove to you? About Kasavnu B'simen Kuf Tzadi Yesiv Katan Tes. The Al Korachach Eidu Mishum Shlichus. It's not based on Shlichus. With the Kasa B'Shulchan Aruch Sham, Ein Konin B'Shabbos, Vim Konu Afa B'Sh Asu Avera Konu. Says the Shulchan Aruch, in Cheshev Mishpat, in Simen Kuf Tzadi Hei, that if a person is not allowed to make a kinyan on Shabbos, that's a violation of Mekka Chamemka B'Shabbos, but B'di Evet, if a person made a kinyan on Shabbos, B'dieved, the kinyan is valid. So if you made a kinyan chalipin on Shabbos, you weren't supposed to. I wasn't supposed to sell you this car on Shabbos, but I went ahead and did it anyway. B'dieved, the kinyan is valid. Says it tells the afal gav the kfahoya minig bismanehem shwa edim nostun sudishalahem chmoshkos v'tubishem arash. Even though the practice of the kona himself not giving the handkerchief, the prevalent practice in the Middle Ages was that the edim would give their handkerchief on behalf of the kona. Excels continues. If that's the case, at the back of the top of the last page, v'im kain ein shaliach l'dvar aveira. Says the Ketzos, how does it work? How could the Shulchan Aruch say that a kinyan that's done, a kinyan chalipa that's done on Shabbos is acceptable if the kinyan's being done, but if the kinyan's being done by the person himself? Okay, but the ever the kinyan, you did an aveira, chal Shabbos, klap ochet, but the kinyan's still valid. But if it's being done by the handkerchief being given by a third party, by the Eidim, by somebody else, and if you're going to tell me that that practice is predicated upon shlichos, so then you're in a big problem because we have a rule, ein shlich dvar aveira. I can't appoint you to be an agent when there's an issa, when there's an aveira involved. So, says the Ketzos, three more words, v'afil b'midah derabbanan. He says, even though the aveira is only a derabbanan, because of doing business on Shabbos, it's not nisa deraisa, it's only nisa derabbanan, it doesn't matter. The Ketzos claims, it's a question, but he claims, that ein shlich dvar aveira would apply here as well. So comes the Ketzos and says, from the fact that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that a kinyan done b'Shabbos, b'diavad is acceptable. From the fact that the practice in the days of the Shulchan Aruch was to do the kinyan suda through a third party, and from the fact that the din is that ein shlich dvar aveira, you put those three facts together, and you come to the realization that the practice of having a third party give the sudar, what we do, the chosin, the Masada Kedushin hands the sudar, he is not the shliach of the kala. He is not the zeich of the kala. It's based on something totally and completely different. What in the world is it based on? So the Ketzos continues. For lachein ha'leisi, and therefore I have proven earlier, shema de'ein tzarech shlichos, ela kevan shenostin suda shalahem, kona midin evet k'nayni, uchadar mina prakam de kedushin. Says the Ketzos, the real source for this practice of a third party giving the suda and calling it a day, having that an acceptable kinyan chalipin, has nothing to do with shlichus and zechia. It's based on something else. So here the Ketzos is referring to a sugya in Kedushin and of Zion. So let's take a look at that sugya. The 11th of the Ramah comes. So the 11th of the Ramah comes in Kedushin of Zion and Aleph. Heilach mana viskachi liploni mekudeshes midin evakinani. Reuven goes up to a girl, Reuven goes up to Rachel, and he pulls money out of his own pocket. And he says, I want you to take this money, take this ring, and be mekudeshes to Shimon. Now, it's possible that Shimon appointed him as a shliach. It could be, that's a question, that Shimon formally appointed, not formally appointed him. But even if Shimon did appoint him as a shliach, the money is not Shimon's. The money is Reuven's. So what's happening here is a strange thing that Shimon is laying out the money. He's giving the ring, and Reuven is getting a wife. How does that work? Doesn't normally Kinyan Kesef dictate that the Kona has to give the cash? Isn't that the ABCs of a Kinyan? I want to buy a car. So I give you the $10,000 for the car. I want to buy a house. I give you the $500,000 for the house. Isn't that obvious? The Gemara says, no, it's not so obvious. Not only is it not obvious, it's not even necessary. You could have a Kinyan that's done without the Kona losing a penny. Where do we ever find such a thing? Where's the source for such a strange thing? That Reuven's sitting back, not costing him anything, and Shimon's providing the ring. How could that be? Are you talking? So comes the Gemara and says, it's okay. It's what we call Mekudeshes Midin Eved Kenani. When an Eved Kenani wants to free himself, he wants to be free. So the Adam's willing to free him. How are you going to go about freeing him? So we spoke about this a little bit in the past. So there are two methods of freeing, two primary methods of freeing an Eved Kenani. One is through a shtar, writing a document like a get, and the other is through kesef. So if money is given to the Adam on behalf of the Eved Kenani will go free. Who is providing that money? It's not the Eved Kenani providing the money. He doesn't own anything. Mashikon Eved Kenani Rabo. So when the Torah tells us, for Haftedon of Dos, the Torah gives us a method of Shichur Eved Kenani through Kesef, it's obvious that the money is being provided by somebody else. How did that work? What kind of Kinyan Kesef is that? How can the Torah give us a model of Kinyan Kesef when the Kona himself is not coming up with the cash? What do you see from here? Chiddush HaTorah. That's also called Kinyan Kesef. Kinyan Kesef doesn't necessitate that the Kona give the money. What's really important, the real critical part of Kinyan Kesef, is that the makneh receives the money. As long as the seller gets the cash, it doesn't really matter who's writing the check, that's fine. As long as the makneh got his money, that's perfectly okay. If that's the case, that the makneh gets his money, and that's all right, so we can derive that is not only true by Eved Kenani, we can extrapolate to other cases of Kinyan Kesef and Halach as well. And of course, our purpose is primarily Kiddushin. So comes the Gemara and says, as a din min haTorah, that if I go ahead and I take my money, I know exactly what's going on, no one stole anyone's money, no one's taking any money without rishus, I give my ring to the woman and I say, I want you to be Mekudeshes to Ploni, she's Mekudeshes. The Kiddushin will in fact be Chal. That's the Chiddush haTorah called the Parsha of Eved Kenani. So comes the Gemara and says, that's what's going on in the Berachos Tish as well. When the Masada Kedushin hands the handkerchief to the Choson on, quote unquote, on behalf of the Kala, he's not a Shaliach of the Kala. He's not a Zoich on behalf of the Kala. Just as by Kinyan Kesef, it's not necessary for the Kona to give the Kesef. All that's necessary is that the Machna receive the Kesef. Just as that principle is derived min haTorah from Eved Kenani, that similar principle is derived for Chalipin as well. The Pasuk in Megillah Shura speaks about how you have to give the handkerchief, you have to give the shoe, you have to give the kli. Not really true. You don't really have to give it as long as he gets it. So even if somebody else gave it on your behalf, that's okay. He is not your shaliach, he is not your zoicha, has nothing to do with shlichus and tzchiyah. It's a chiddush b'fnei atzmo called din Eved Kenani, derived from the kesef of Eved Kenani, and we're just connecting the dots. If it works for Eved Kenani, then it works for Kesef, it works for Chalip, and it works for all of these kinyanim that require a giving and taking. They don't really require a giving and taking, they really only require a taking. That's the Chiddush of the Ketzos. What is the Ketzos gain with the Shtichel Torah?
The Chuppah is though, we always ask.
That's a different story. We ask because the Chosan is holding onto the ring, and he thinks that the ring belongs to him. If the father of the Chosan would come and say, listen, I'm going to give my ring on behalf of my son, that would work. But that's not what's happening. What's happening, the Chosan is giving a ring, and he's telling the Kala, yeah, I'm about to be Kaddish with this ring. That's not even his ring. So he's a Goslin, who gives him a right to take the father's ring without the guy, the father's Rishos. So if the father would give him the ring, or the father would do it on his behalf, that would work. But when the Chosan is doing it on his own, with a borrowed ring, so that's not going to be acceptable. So comes, Nick Tosin says, once we just prove to you that the giving of the Chalipin on behalf of somebody else has nothing to do with shlichus and tzchiyah, guess what? The good news is that we don't have to worry about ein shlichus and va'avera. That's why it works on Shabbos, because it has nothing to do with shlichus. And the other good news is, we don't have to worry about goyim either, because ein shlichus l'goy, this is not shlichus. Ein zechiyah l'goy, this is not zechiyah. This is a different parasha, it's a different thing, it's Eved Kenani. So since we're not going down the root of shlichus and zechiyah, therefore the limitations of goyim don't apply. So says the Ketzos, that's why Tosus never said that you can't have the Jew do it on behalf of the Goy. What did Tosus write? Tosus, you can't put it there into writing. You can't put it there into print. And why can't you put it into print? And what's so terrible to put that into print? So Tosus says, if you put that into print and you're right, we hereby did it on behalf of the Goy. Not everyone's such a big Talmid Chacham. Not everyone learned every Ketzos. So people are going to start to think, oh, Shlichus the Goy, it doesn't work. And they're going to start to raise questions about the validity of the Shtar. So in order to avoid confusion, just write, the Goy did it himself. The Goy didn't do it himself. We did it on behalf of the Goy. And it's still okay, says the Ketzos. So the reason why Tosus wrote backwards, they wrote a roundabout, it wasn't roundabout, it was deliberate. They just wanted to highlight, it's okay to do it on behalf of the Goy. That's not a problem, to do it on behalf of the Goy. What the problem is, don't write it, because if you write it, that's going to throw everybody off. But to do it, because this is based on Eved Kenani, not based on Shlichus and Zechiyah. Hopefully, that's Hashem, in the next Shia, we just want to put the final touches on this Rabbeinu Tam, because this is really relevant, potentially the Maisa. But hopefully, that's Hashem, we'll move on to the next Shia.